I hate to go all technical on you, but all hands on deck, swirly thing alert.
Attention.
Listen, you motherfuckers.
Buckle up, pedal heads.
You're experiencing the Lotus Effect with Phoenix and Phone Boy.
Nobody can fuck with us.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for him.
You are my podcast, my only podcast. So if you fucking take my podcast away, I'm going to shove my foot so far up your ass.
It is out of sheer morbid curiosity. I'm allowing this freak show to continue.
How do you fix that, though?
Take a big step back and literally
suck my dick.
Are you interested? I know you are, because it's fuck or walk.
You're shitting me.
Have you made your decision for Christ?
To tell you the truth, I don't give a shit.
I would not say such things if I were you.
Who the fuck are you?
Phoenix and Phone Boy?
Oh, they're horrible.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
It's wholesome smut. The whole show.
Yeah, it is wholesome smut, the whole show. And welcome to episode 127 of The Lotus Effect, which we've provisionally titled Kinky Tiki, which, how did that come up?
It came up because you were looking at different fonts, and I wasn't sure if you had said the word tiki or kinky, and I was like, oh, it's Kinky Tiki, so we wrote it down.
Yeah, we wrote it down, yes. And so, yeah, so we are we are messing with our logo. We'll talk about that in the Toast and Jam segment, but you know, the title will probably change because that's the way things go around here. The show is made up, the content doesn't matter, and I'm Phone Boy.
The Lord of the G-String.
Yes, you are definitely the Lord of the G-String, and I am Phoenix. And
need some titties.
Ha! Me might have to do that again because, yeah, my shit was muted.
An emotional support stripper.
I'd like to see some titties.
That's right. We're sure Sir Benrose would like to see some titties. And I would like to see this show go off without a hitch, without me fucking things up or mute buttons being a thing. But since that's not going to happen, let's just dive right in.
What is this, a freak out?
This is kind of strange.
This is terrific.
I think I'm going to be sick.
Not a speck of light is showing, so the danger must be growing. Are the fires of hell a-glowing? Is the grisly reaper mowing? Yes, the danger must be growing, for the rowers keep on rowing, and they're certainly not showing any signs that they are slowing.
We're there.
I just had an orgasm.
And that's kind of important to have an orgasm.
Have you noticed the theme here? Sir Benrose wants to see some titties, and then he's having orgasms. I think we know where things are going.
Yes. Well, we know the Lotus affects everyone differently, and so however and wherever the Lotus is affecting you, we'd love to hear about it.
I got mail! Yay!
So you can send us a message on the dong. Our new shiny handles are Phoenix at lotuseffect.social, Phoneboy at lotuseffect.social. That's P-H-E-O-N-I-X, by the way. You can also send email to P-H-E-O-N-I-X at lotuseffect.show or Phoneboy at lotuseffect.show. You can also call 253-237-3321.
One ringy dingy. Two ringy dingy.
Dell Computers, this is Chip.
Now, of course, Ernestine and Chip are not standing by, but you know Google Translator is, and it will mangle your transcript, and you could be a show title. Now, you can also send us snail mail if you want to send us in the, you know, make the government employees keep their jobs. You can hit us up in the back channel. We'll be more than glad to provide you with an address to send us anything you'd like.
Yes, exactly. You can also. This is the number that you call or text. You want to sound off on our latest our Duncan Hines question or DQ. This week it's going to be your. I think we said your worst date.
That's right. We want to know about the worst date you've ever been on.
Oh my!
Now, God help us if you actually married your worst date, but that's another subject for another day.
Clearly. Anyway, that's Yes. Or because I was married to her anyway. That's a different... Yeah.
I'm really glad you caught that. Good on you, phone boy. You're not as stoned as you think you are. No. That innuendo was just painted vividly for you.
Yes, it was. Even a dumb stone prick like me can occasionally see those things.
Nah, you're not dumb. Okay. You may be stoned, but you're not dumb.
Okay, so... Now, of course, you can sign off on Now that's a decongestant. I probably need some sign off.
You probably need some. So when you call 253-237-3321 to weigh in on our Duncan question, which of course is, you know, tell us about your worst date. Just you know, we play that during the voicemail segment. And we would love to hear you give us your feedback on that.
Yes, and meanwhile, it is time for we are a podcast that believes in contribution of value for value, as in going both ways here. And so,
well, we call it the return on investment. Motherfucker.
We'll do anything to be rich.
Yes. Now, this is where we call it the return on investment, because we invest a certain amount of time, although sometimes you wonder how much time we invest in the show.
Despite the fact it doesn't look like much, we really do put a lot into it.
Yes. So we do this for ourselves, but we hope you find it entertaining and informative. And if you do, then that you share some of that value back with us. You put it into a number and somehow you send it back to us. Now, so there's ways you can do that. You go to LotusEffect.show and click on that green We Like Money button and send us some cash via PayPal.
We're a charitable organization. If your money offends you, we'll take it off your hands and put it to good use.
That's right. You can send us boostergrams using the Podcasting 2.0 app. You can also send us feedback. Of course, there's people have sent it in postal mail and stuff like that. So here's what we have in terms of our return on investment. We have a monthly donation from Sharky of $7.66.
Oh, you the executive producer.
Yeah,
that's right.
He's right. And he's not always in the chat. That's cool though. He sometimes pops in and
Everybody's
out.
Got a life.
That's right.
You gotta give people a break.
That's right. Well, Weirdo was boosting some salt and pepper. None of your business. For 333 sats.
That's a guy that's got a life. I'll tell you what, he worked like an 11-hour day yesterday and still was cool enough to pop into Rideshare Radio last night just to say, hey, how are you? And he had to be up at 7:30 this morning. So thank you for your courage, sir, and the long hours you are putting in to take care of your brood over there. Yes. We appreciate you.
Yeah, and he boosted another 333 sats saying, Foster the People, Helena Beat. Yeah,
I had not heard that one. It was pretty fresh. You, of course, know. You know, my favorite Foster the People song is Pumped Up Kicks, but that's irrelevant.
That's right. So, but that is, I think that was it for the ROI segment this week. And
but that's okay, because it's not just about money. It's also about, you know, we told you how you can provide us feedback. You can also return the investment by listening live or at all, for that matter. You can tell your friends. You can... Maybe like Sir Bemrose and Bemlet do a lot, making drops for the show.
Alpha, beta, tell a friend. No, wait a minute. That's an old commercial from fucking. I'm old. I'm old and fucking. That's like old 80s, early 80s fucking groceries. I'm something's wrong with me, honey. Something's very wrong with me.
We are already aware of that.
Yes.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
But irrelevant to the fact, however you want to contribute your return on investment to us, we are very grateful. And if you want to get in on this Boostergram thing, if you are interested in having your name and your request or whatever you boost read out, you can do so by getting yourself one of those new Podcast 2.0 apps that let you join the party. You can either go to newpodcastapps.com if you are shy, or if you're a little racier like we are, go to nudepodcastapps.com. Now take off all your clothes before you do that. Otherwise, it doesn't count.
Yeah, that's right. So, but anyway, I mean, you should, there's a clip I think you're supposed to play.
Now, I won't say that I understand everything, but it was certainly different. And, well worth a dollar.
It's always well worth a dollar or more to listen to our shenanigans. But now that we've explained ourselves, I think we can take it from Johnny Fever.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say, give it to me straight, doctor, I can take it.
Yeah, there's one part of that we're not going to take.
We don't want your shit.
Please don't send us your shit.
That's right. Be respectful. We say it every week. We're going to keep saying it. Not that anyone hasn't been respectful, but we just want to keep reminding everyone that we absolutely do not tolerate any racism and just being a complete lump of shit. We're just not about it. Speaking of a lump of shit, our health segment, which will never be brought to you by these lumps of shit.
Brought to you by Pfizer.
Not a chance in hell. Now, this is kind of a water is wet story. We'll warn you in advance. The new science on what ultra-processed foods do to your brain.
This is drugs. This is your brain on drugs. Any questions?
Yes. Now, the new research suggests links between ultra-processed foods such as chips, many cereals, and most packaged snacks at the grocery store, and changes in the way we learn, remember, and feel. Those are just coincidences. These foods can act like addictive substances, researchers say, and some scientists are proposing a new mental health condition called ultra-processed food use disorder.
Oh, are you fucking kidding me?
We're all gonna die!
They're trying to kill us with food.
Diets filled with such foods may raise the risk of mental health and sleep problems.
Okay, I'm going to interject. How many times do we have to mention Dr. Georgia Ead, this wonderful doctor who gets it, realizes how important diet is, and the problems that we face and that are caused when we eat garbage food? How many times do we have to talk about it? We've said it, and we've said it 100 more times. And these people doing a study does not make it any less applicable. What you eat affects your mental health by all rights and responsibilities. And it's actually funny, because we have kind of a boots-on-the-ground story about that. So while we were away in Vegas and such, my mother decided that she was going to be off the chain and eat and drink whatever the flying hell she wanted, because that's what she does. She's an adult. Fine. But then she's bitching because she's not sleeping. Well, it couldn't be the screwdrivers in the fridge that you consumed. It couldn't be the pizza you ate after coming back from being with your grandson. It couldn't be that entire half gallon of chocolate ice cream that you consumed over X amount of time. No, no clue at all why you're having trouble sleeping. There, my rant is over.
Well, okay. Well, now the science is still early and researchers say there's a lot they don't know. Not all ultra-processed foods are equal, some scientists say, adding that some might be good for you. Probably not. A diet high in ultra-processed foods have been linked with obesity. Figuring out exactly why, beyond calorie counts and nutrient composition, and makers of such foods as processed meats and muffins defend their products and note that there isn't a consistent, universally accepted definition of ultra-processed food.
They are so full of shit.
Yeah, the makers of America's trusted household brands are committed to protecting access to nutritious, affordable, convenient, and safe food, said a spokesperson for the Consumer Brands Association and Industry Trade Group while he was laughing behind his back.
Yeah, I was going to say, guy's talking out of both sides of his face, laughing as he's trying to sell the American public this line of bullshit.
Many ultra-processed foods hit the brain rapidly when we eat them and have a strong effect on its reward system, which has evolved and evolved in pleasure, motivation, and learning. Now, those effects are similar to ones when people use nicotine, alcohol, and other addictive drugs, said Ashley Gearhart, a professor of psychology at the University of Michigan, who's a co-creator of a measure of food addiction.
Oreos are just as addictive as cocaine.
Now, the way foods are produced might partially explain why. Yeah, it might have something to do with it. To make items such as chips, breakfast cereals, and snack bars, manufacturers often break down the cellular structure of ingredients, stripping them of water and fiber, making them easier to chew, eat, and digest quickly. The components hit our brains fast, which makes the foods more addictive, Gearhart says. Now, this combination of high levels of both fat and carbs in many ultra-processed foods is likely another reason why we crave them and have a tough time stopping them when we eat them. Now, chocolate ice cream, french fries, pizza, and chips are among the foods, the top foods that people report test eating in an addictive way, according to Gearhart's studies. Now, many of these are high in both refined carbohydrates and fat, a combination that isn't typically found in nature. Now, foods in nature are often high in fat or carbs, but not often both.
Now, in a recent study published in the journal Cell Metabolism, researchers primed participants with two different kinds of snacks and saw how their brains later responded to a cue for a high-fat, high-sugar food, which many ultra-processed foods are. Scans of their brains showed that participants who ate a high-fat, high-sugar snack for 8 weeks had much higher activity in parts of the brain that create dopamine, a neurotransmitter involved in motivation, learning, and expecting and experiencing rewards, when they saw a cue telling them to expect another high-sugar, high-fat food. People who frequently eat high-fat, high-sugar foods and then see signals of them in the real world likely have a similar response, according to researchers. Scientists were surprised to find that people who had been eating the high-fat, high-sugar snack also had changes in how their brains learned. Now, while participants were having their brains scanned, the researchers had them do a basic learning task, requiring them to push a button associated with a picture when they heard certain tones. When people who'd been eating the high-fat, high-sugar snack didn't get the picture they expected, their brains showed greater activity in parts involved in evaluating situations. Mental health is also affected by diet. We said it earlier. Several recent studies have found a link between diets high in ultra-processed foods and an increased risk of depression. A large review of research published last month in the journal BMJ found an increased risk of depression, anxiety, and sleep problems with diets high in ultra-processed foods. Duh. So Gearhart and colleagues are proposing a new mental health disorder that they plan to call ultra-processed food use disorder, or highly processed food use disorder, for inclusion in the official guide that psychiatrists and psychologists use to diagnose patients. Symptoms include intense cravings, difficulty cutting down consumption, and withdrawal symptoms like irritability and agitation when people try to reduce their intake. Dude, all of this is just a sugar withdrawal, folks. Seriously, weigh in on this, phone boy.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is classic sugar withdrawal. On all, like, carbohydrate and sugar withdrawal. That's all this is. This is literally a new term for hangry, is how I see this.
Yeah, it's pretty much all this is.
So one of the main ways diet affects mental health is likely via the gut microbiome, according to Felice Jaca, the director of Food and Mood Center at Deakin University in Australia. The gut microbiome refers to the microbes that live in the digestive tract. It influences immune function, the stress response system, and the production of neurotransmitters like serotonin, all of which affect mental health, according to Jaca. Eating a typical American diet full of ultra-processed foods can change your microbiome so that it's less diverse and has fewer types of beneficial bacteria, according to Arpana Gupta, the co-director of the Goodman Luskin Microbiome Center at the University of California, Los Angeles, so UCLA. Changes in the brain's reward system caused by high-fat, high-sugar foods could also likely feed into mental health problems, DeFeliciano said. The fact that your diet is altering that reward system pretty profoundly actually means that everything in your life is being affected, she said. And that's totally true. It's really ridiculous, but literally, I mean, I keep saying literally, I see this as them just renaming hangry. I mean, that's my opinion on this. That's what this reads like.
Yeah, they're trying to... I don't know. They're trying to whitewash the bullshit, you know.
Well, it's much like the way that they continually renamed PTSD, shell shock, battle fatigue, you know, from way back in like World War I to current, they've renamed that exact same condition numerous times to soften the blow and make it a little less than what it is. No, Okay. This is not acceptable. Just because you rename it doesn't make it anything less than what it is, which is a massive addiction to sugar and carbs, which is perpetrated by the fact that they're in basically everything except for one ingredient, foods, which is why that's all you should eat.
Well, yes, exactly. Okay, how about we move on to the next story, and I'll let you take it while I'm trying to do
stuff. Oh, you mean the deadly risk of this fat loss drug?
Oh!
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 Now, the miracle fat-melting drug Ozempic has been linked in a study to a series of rare but potentially fatal psychiatric episodes, according to scientists. The injectable prescription drug was developed to manage blood sugar levels in patients with type 2 diabetes, but it's gained popularity and gone viral on social media due to one very sought-after side effect, which is weight loss. Ozempic is based on a naturally occurring human hormone called glucagon, like peptide 1, which plays an important role in regulating appetite and blood sugar levels. Its active ingredient is a molecule called semaglutide, which mimics the structure of this GLP-1 hormone and activates its receptors. In doing so, it induces feelings of fullness while delaying the emptying of the stomach, making you less hungry and therefore less likely to overeat. Now, semaglutide is also used in Ozempic's sister drug, Wegovy, which has been approved by the FDA for chronic weight loss management between the start of 2020 and the end of 2022. Prescriptions of the GLP-1 mimicking medications like semaglutide increased by 300% across the U.S., according to healthcare analytics firm Trillion Health.
It'll be safe and effective.
Now, the drug has since been endorsed by celebrities and influencers, with hashtag Ozempic reaching over 1.4 billion views on TikTok. However, when used as a weight loss drug, semaglutide has been shown to have some uncomfortable side effects. Most studies into these have focused on gut problems, but a new study published in the Internal Journal of Clinical Pharmacology has highlighted a concern associated between semaglutide and adverse psychiatric effects, including depression, anxiety, and suicidal thoughts. Pharmacological manufacturer Novo Nordisk, which produces Ozempic and Wegovy, cited the FDA, saying there's no evidence found regarding suicidal thoughts or actions caused by these medications. Bullshit. We believe that our findings, which highlight potential mental health issues associated with the new anti-obesity medications, are of significant importance to both healthcare providers and patients. The study's first author, Mansur Tabekhu, an associate professor in clinical pharmacology at the University of Jeddah in Saudi Arabia, told Newsweek, "These medications have become some of the most commonly used. The adverse events reported in this study serve as a reminder to physicians to carefully assess a patient's mental health before prescribing these medications." To come to these results, Tabakwi and co-author Hajar Elkout combed through Eduravigilance, the European Medicines Agency's system for managing and reporting medication side effects. The pair analyzed case reports linked to semaglutide, Ozempic and Wegovy, as well as the related GLP-1 mimic drugs liraglutide, brand name Saxendra, and tirzepatide, brand name Mounjaro, between January 2021 and May 2023. Over this period of time, 31,444 adverse events were reported, with 481 being adverse psychiatric effects. According to the study's findings, women made up 65%, or 242N, of the report, while men accounted for 29%, or 108N. Tabakwi said fatal outcomes were predominantly among men, 8 out of 9, resulting from completed suicide attempts and depression. This is a serious matter that warrants attention. While more research is needed to confirm these results, Tabakwi said that their findings merit serious consideration by medical professionals when considering prescribing these medications to their patients. And I agree. I think that there needs to be a lot of thought put into whether or not to prescribe these for many reasons. I mean, we've seen so many reports of, you know, gastroparesis and that woman who had her genitals like skin burned, flaked off on the toilet seat. These are just do it. Look, put the work in, folks. Seriously, stop taking this medication and put the work in. Go to the gym. Don't eat all the sugar and processed foods. This is not that hard. It's called willpower. Find some. Because unless you want to end up in the position where your genitals are burning off and you can't take a poop, just do the work, folks.
Yeah, I couldn't have said it better myself. This next story, when I read this story, I'm gonna read the headline to this next story, because this clip that we're gonna play was my immediate reaction when I read this headline. Americans show paradoxical behavior when it comes to their diet, study reveals.
Yeah, and monkeys might fly out of my butt.
Yeah. Well, while a majority of Americans acknowledge the health and environmental benefits of eating more plant-rich diets, only about a quarter are willing to adopt them. Well, we're not going to go there. That's just one of the key findings of a recent study by researchers in the Department of Human Nutrition, Foods, and Exercise at Virginia Tech's College of Agriculture and Life Sciences.
I'm surprised it wasn't
Harvard.
Yeah, that's it.
Yes. The results published in the journal Nutrients revealed that Americans' beliefs about the value of eating more plants for health revealed that environmental reasons are at odds with their dietary choices. Now, U.S. consumers have favorable perceptions of foods and beverages that support human and health, environmental health, but that's not translating into what they're purchasing and consuming, said the study's lead researcher, Catherine Con Savage Stanley, this is a savage con. I mean, that's what have a girl in there, PhD student in the Department of Human Nutrition, Foods, and Exercise.
You got some splaining to do.
Yeah. Now, the researchers pored over a decade of national survey responses gathered from 2012 to 2022 by the International Food Information Council to examine Americans' dietary patterns and practices. They statistically analyzed more than 1,000 respondents' perceptions, beliefs, and behaviors regarding plant-rich dietary practices for each year of the study and how they revealed or how they related to human health, environmental, social, and economic impacts. Now, the plant-rich diets can range from vegan and vegetarian, which avoid meat consumption, to flexitarian and Mediterranean diets, which include...
Flexitarian? What the fuck?
Yes, that include small amounts of meat and fish along with plant-based foods. Well, you know, that's pretty wide range there, Captain. You know.
Yeah, no kidding. Talk about some confusing circular language.
Yes, meaning, you know, kind of like how they throw, like, you know, unprocessed meat with processed meat and say it's all bad.
Precisely.
Okay, yes. I'm trying to see where we are here. Now, these types of diets are encouraged by the World Health Organization, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, as eating patterns that promote human health, have low climate impact, and are affordable for feeding a growing world population.
That is such bullshit, especially since they truly proved that this whole fake meat actually is more harmful than the cow farts.
Yes. Now, the study's finding included the following. Now, across all the years surveyed, 73% of Americans said plant proteins were healthy. 39% said animal proteins were healthy. Now, an average of 4.6% of consumers said they were following that they followed vegetarian or vegan diets. Well, that's, you know, there's a big difference between those two things, actually. An average of so the percentage of Americans that reported following a plant-rich dietary pattern more than doubled across the years surveyed, from 12.1% to 25.8% by 2019 to 2022. Younger consumers, Generation Z, born 1997 to 2012, and millennials, born 1981 to 96, were more likely to follow a plant-rich pattern than older consumers, Gen X, born 65 to 80, baby boomers, born 1946 to 64, and the Silent Generation, born 28 to 45 in all years surveyed. Now, from 2020 to 22, the percentage of respondents who reported eating more red meat increased from 13% to 19%. About one quarter of Generation Z and millennials also reported increased red meat consumption in the past year, compared to 10% of older adults. Over a 10-year period, a declining percentage of Americans identified healthfulness as an important, it's important in their food purchasing choices.
Well, no, because this is literally a matter of people having entirely too much choices, quite honestly.
Americans will eat anything, anything, anything. If you were selling sautéed raccoons' assholes on a stick, Americans would buy them and eat them.
Now, eating foods identified as sustainable is important, but not enough for people to pay for it. Now, in 2016, 75% of respondents said it was somewhat or very important to purchase and consume sustainably produced products, but this decreased to about half the respondents identifying this is important in future years surveyed. Now, on average, 32% of consumers said environmental sustainability was a substantive factor in their purchase decisions. Sustainability was consistently ranked as the least important factor in Americans' food and beverage purchase decisions, following convenience, price, healthfulness, and taste.
And the sad part is that which they think is healthful really isn't when you think about the shit that's in it.
Less than one quarter of respondents indicated that they purposely purchased foods labeled as organic, locally sourced, environmentally friendly, or plant-based. Now,
nice execution.
You're doing terrific.
Now, of course, more information is needed, so two-thirds of respondents felt it was challenging for consumers to know what impact their food and beverage choices might have on the environment. Chances are, if it came from a store, if it didn't come from a local farmer, it probably had pretty bad impact on the environment. That's just me.
Well, yeah, but they're not going to admit to that because that's not good for the overall profit.
Now, similarly, most respondents said it was easier to access information about the environmental impact of foods and beverages. It would have a greater influence on their choices. Go to a farmer's market. All right. Stanley said...
Or stop listening to the M5M.
Yes. Stanley said that findings reveal a need for government leaders, health and nutrition professionals, and the food and beverage industry itself to provide more information on the sustainability of food products.
I'm sorry. Excuse me while I laugh out loud that you actually think that this is going to be something that these people are going to line up and go, yeah, sure. We're going to all of a sudden start telling y'all the truth just because this person said they think it's a good idea.
Yeah. And So Stanley said the findings reveal a need for government leaders, health and nutrition professionals.
You already mentioned that fact.
Oh, we did. Okay, I'm sorry.
That's what I was ranting about, was that she actually thinks that, you know, the government and the professionals in the industry is going to open up and say, this is the truth because you want to know it. So we can't expect consumers to make sustainable choices if they don't know the impact of their purchases, Stanley said. We need to be doing more collectively to educate Americans on the benefits of plant-rich dietary patterns and to provide an environment where making healthy and sustainable purchases is the default choice. Oh, brother. In a follow-up study, Stanley is examining the landscape of U.S. media campaigns that encourage or discourage plant-rich dietary patterns and practices. Too often, corporations will place the responsibility on individuals, but Americans need a supportive food and beverage environment to make choices, she said. This tree-hugging heifer is making me nuts.
Yeah, I think so.
This is what I think she needs.
The key to life is a penis in your asshole.
I think she needs a penis in her asshole that would change her view on the world. Now, this is actually something that I think is phenomenal, and they definitely don't need a penis in their household. There is actually a restaurant in the UK that is letting people pay as they can while rescuing tons of food.
Eat it. Just eat it.
Now, a restaurant in England has been able to employ 22 full and part-time staffers serving food rescued from landfills to people on a pay-as-you-can basis. This fantastic achievement is rooted in two significant challenges faced by the UK. Price inflation has increased the average cost of food by one quarter, and as many as 10 million Brits, Scots, and North Irish are malnutritioned. The Long Table's remarkable business model is rooted in conscience and ethics as much as anything they put on the menu. The Guardian reports that 6.4 million tons of food goes to waste in the country every year, amounting to quite a hefty bill of carbon emissions from rotting food and transportation to move it around. Now, perhaps the reason this special Gloucestershire restaurant has been able to stay open despite allowing people to eat for free if they want is that the plan was never to focus on the negative. We hold a space where we're all collectively trying to answer a question. What if everyone in our community had access to great food and people to eat it with? According to Will North, the Long Table's general manager, lunch is served 5 days a week from noon while the store is open every morning for coffee and cake. Dinner is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Everyone eats the same meal based on what the managers are rescuing from their suppliers, but that doesn't mean the menu is stale. We're not pro-organic, anti-organic, pro-GM, or anti-GM. We're just pro-food, said North. But it just so happens that our local producers really prioritize the planet over anything else. A not-for-profit community interest company, the turnover is about enough to cover all costs. But little else remains. Nevertheless, they don't need any grant money from the government. All their profit comes from diners, heavily supported by drink and coffee sales. Now, The Guardian writes that others are looking at replicating the model in Cirencester and Falmouth. And good for them. I think that that's great that they're preventing food from going to waste because it really is just, it's terrible how much food goes to waste because it's not consumed and there's all these shitty laws. So good for this restaurant being able to do this and make a difference. It's, to me, it's not even about the planet. It's about people being able to not, like, food not going to waste, people not going hungry. One begets the other. It's beautiful. Kudos to them.
Yes, exactly. That's why I pulled that story. Now, so meanwhile, I think we have to. It is. I think it is time for the cavalcade of stupidity. And
I believe so.
Yes, and so now I have to play this.
Heidi ho, pedal heads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity. And since I'm MIA, here's Phone Boy to take over.
Yes, so of course. I have stuff queued up when we don't have any episodes produced, and so here we go. So this is one of those things I remember listening to when Dr. Demento, and I had to look this band up because I don't think I've ever played a song by them. Sparks is an American pop and rock duo formed by the brothers Ron and Muscle and Russell Mail in Los Angeles. Now, the duo was noted for their quirky approach to songwriting. Their music is often accompanied by sophisticated and acrobatic lyrics, often about women, and sometimes containing literary or cinematic references in an idiosyncratic theatrical stage presence typified by the contrast between Russell's animated, hyperactive frontman antics and Ron's deadpan scowling. Russell Mail has a distinctive, wide-ranging voice, while Ron Mail plays keyboards in an intricate and rhythmic style. Now, their frequently changing styles and visual presentations have kept the band at the forefront of modern artful pop music. Certainly written like a fucking Wikipedia page, which is where I pulled this off of. Now, I don't understand. I don't think I recognize any of the songs that were mentioned in here. So career highlights include This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us, which reached number two on the UK singles chart in 1974. The disco hit the number one song in heaven in 1979, resulting from a collaboration with Giorgio Moroder and marking a stylish shift towards new wave synth, When I'm With You, which made the Australian and French singles charts in 1980. The single I Predict, which provided Sparks' first appearance on the Billboard Hot 100, reaching number 60 in May 1982. The 1983 single Cool Places, with the Go-Go's rhythm guitarist and vocalist Jane Wieldon, and When Do I Get to Sing My Way, which was the top airplay record in Germany for 1994. Because there's a reason I haven't heard of these guys. However, this is a short song that is nice and demented. that we're going to play called Batteries Not Included.
I brought it home and I opened it up, and the smile came to my face for the first time in a while. Yes, a smile came to my face for the first time in a while. I turned it on, but nothing happened when I did.
Nothing happened at all.
I kicked it down the stairs, I threw it at the wall.
Hey,
batteries not included.
Yes, that is a short song, so we're not going to play the full thing, and because that was the full thing. So there you go. So that was our cavalcade of stupidity this week. We'll see whether it's Rev or I come up with something for the next week. But I think we are now at the Tales from Rideshare segment.
Yes, we are. Well, we had actually a couple of interesting tales from Rideshare this week. And this is, so the first couple things we're going to talk about are very serious and they're a little dark. So, you know, I'll warn you all in the beginning. So there is a 22-year-old who has gone missing from a bar on Broadway. It is owned by Luke Bryant, and he has put out a statement about it. And I just happened to have in my rideshare a security guard that works for the same company that does security for the bar he disappeared from. After being kicked out, his buddies that he was with, now these fucking guys, they were told he was being kicked out because he was drunk and whatever, and they just let him fucking go. Like, no fucks to give. You know, real good bros. You know, your buddy's drunk off his ass, and you expect he's going to make himself, you know, get himself to his hotel when, you know, he probably barely even knows his own name. But no, that's fine. Just let him on his own. So the last camera image of him, the last footage we see is him stumbling across Broadway and tripping and hitting his head against a light post and then heading in the direction of the homeless bridge, which is over by the river. I personally think they're going to find him in the river. I'm not going to lie. But at the same time, I hope they do find him safe, but shame on his friends for just fucking leaving him. And I found out that the reason that he got kicked out was obviously because he was too drunk. He had gotten really loaded at another establishment, and they were refusing to serve him. So he went elsewhere, and they basically refused to serve him at any of the other establishments, including the one where my rider works. And I think they're going to find him in the river. I hate to say that. But it was interesting to actually have somebody. I can't divulge all the information that he told me, obviously, for anonymity purposes. But it is, they are saying that the security company is faultless in this. They did not do anything wrong. I personally have made a statement that I think Nashville Metro PD fucked up. You know, you've got four cops out there harassing a fucking homeless guy, but you can't make sure a drunk idiot from, I think he's in from Indiana or something, makes it safely into a ride share or something. You know, and not to mention the fact the way this guy hit his head on this lamppost from the video, I mean, he was down for a good 10 seconds. He hit his head pretty hard from what the security officer said. So I would not be surprised if he had concussed himself or worse, caused a massive brain bleed that ultimately caused him to black out. The last place his phone was pinged was actually over by the homeless encampment. And I can tell you, okay, those people have nothing to lose. And from the reports, the guy was being a real mouthy asshole. So if he was acting that way towards some homeless fucking people, yeah, it would not surprise me if somebody fucking shanked him and threw his ass in the river. Bye-bye. Never to be seen again. Sorry, I'm just being real, folks. Which leads me into something else that I encountered. I had a bartender who was telling me about this new trafficking thing that I was not aware of. Now, we all know human trafficking is a really big problem in this entire country. It doesn't matter where you go. It's a problem in my small town. It's a problem in Nashville, Knoxville. It's probably a problem in your small town. Let's not be bullshitting ourselves. So ultimately, this really got me. And this is ever more reason why I don't go out. And if I do, I don't lose track of the person I'm with, etc. So the new way that they are trafficking girls, and this is wild. She put it in the context of Instagram models, but I'm sure it's not just Insta models. Long story short, this happened to a girl she knew. She was drugged. Somebody roofied her drink. And she has no recollection. She remembered being in the bar, and the next thing she remembered, she was waking up in a hotel room and had to go to the hospital to get herself put back together, because apparently this is the new way they traffic you. They drug you. They bring you to a hotel room. You know, 10 or so guys pay to get, you know, do whatever they want to do with you. And then by the time you wake up, everybody's fucking gone. And it's gross. It's really fucking unfortunate. So you got to make sure that you have somebody with you at all times, and make sure that you know where your drink is at all times. Do not let your drink out of your sight for any reason. Just don't, because it's really scary and it's really real. They're getting a lot more educated and slick with how they're doing this. And it's horrible. I don't want to see this happen to anybody. So the last story that I have from Tales from Rideshare is actually one that is kind of a happy story. So I had a guy who drives the staging for bands. And he was telling me, I asked him, of course, you know, because that's a really interesting job. I asked him, I said, what's the coolest, wildest band or whatever that you've been on tour with? And he said Metallica. And he told me some stories about how hard they party and how good they were to them. And I'm telling you, if I was single, he gave me the information for his company, and he said they're hiring, and y'all, I can't lie. The kind of money this dude was talking about, being away from Phone Boy for 8 months for that kind of money, I get to take the winter off. It is a little tempting, slightly tempting, just a little tiny bit. Not enough to make me do it, but I do know that Rev Cybertrucker is interested in doing things like that. So I did pass the information on to him, and hopefully something good will come of it, because I do know he has said it was a childhood dream of his to go out on tour. And of course, you know, the guy was telling me that he's been out with The Op and a few others. Coldplay, he said, was real tree huggers. But I do kind of dig the fact that they had a couple interactive dance floors that the people dancing on it are generating energy. They had bikes to generate, like, the Wi-Fi or whatever. You know, during the concert, you could get on one of these bikes and help generate the energy. I mean, the idea behind it is pretty awesome. But at the end of the day, like, yeah, they're pretty earthy crunchy from what he said. But that's all I have for Tales from Rideshare. So I guess we're going to end up in our Toast and Jam segment.
Well, I'm a bum in the sun and I'm having fun. And I know you know I got no special plans.
Special plans.
Yeah, we got them special plans, all right. We're going to talk about what Phoenix is cooking for them special plans.
Brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Fuck you. I'm eating.
That's right. Fuck you. I'm eating. I'm cooking some pork cordon bleu and Caesar salad for dinner. It's going to be super delicious.
Yes. I can't wait. Yeah. So there's also the chicken that I defenestrated.
You really hung up on this chicken, so I'll talk about the chicken. The chicken is actually for a dinner upcoming in a couple of days, but it needed to be cooked off and cooled so that it can be picked. And I'm sure that you will abscond with more pieces of that meat, because I'm sure you'll be more than glad to get your hands dirty picking the chicken behind the mic, sir.
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
Lies. Fresh hot baked lies. Get them here.
Yes. Now, what isn't a hot fresh baked lie is, okay, so there's kind of a story around our latest vinyl acquisition. So
yes, there is.
There is a song that you were saying, I don't know what song it is, but I need to know what it is.
Yeah, I was losing my mind because, and I had even played the song in my head that reminded me of it during Studio 33. Sadly, it did not jog a memory for Phone Boy of what the song might be until, lo and behold.
Yeah, so we were sitting and listening. We were doing a behind the mic version of Studio 33 Rideshare Radio. We were playing songs back and forth to each other.
Yeah, like he would pick one, I would pick one, he would pick one. You get the idea.
And so I picked this song, and in fact,
you can sample it.
Okay, so yes, I can sample
this
it.
Is our show. We can do whatever the fuck we want.
That's right. So I'm going to.
And actually, you should put it in the list of songs to be played during Studio 33, if I'm honest.
Yeah, well, yeah, we will. I'm going to play a little yes. bit of it right now. Okay, well, I'm not going to play the whole thing because, yeah, we don't want to do that because, yeah, that maybe gets us in trouble or something. I don't know. We do a lot of things that maybe don't get us in trouble, but we are going to play this song later.
We're going to play it later in Studio 33, so you'll be able to hear it.
However, so I played this song and she's like, that's the song I've been wanting to know the name of. What the fuck is the name of this song? And I said, well, Don't Want to Live Without It by Pablo Cruz.
So, of course, the first thing I immediately did was pick up my phone and go onto eBay and procure said vinyl.
However, but what I believe what I said to you was, I need to own this vinyl. That was what I believe.
Yes, which was what made me pick up the phone to procure it, because you said, I would like to own this.
Yes, because I remember my dad having this vinyl. Anyway, so it was just kind of by happenstance that I felt like that was the song that I needed to play at that moment, and that she said, that was the song I've been waiting to know
it
the
is
name.
Amazing how the universe provides.
Yes. Now, speaking of the universe providing,
holy shit.
Yes. So we need to talk about our latest acquisition from our local place.
I had asked you if we could go to quote unquote the candy store to get a vape so that I could do my job in a nice state of don't want to throat punch everybody, and went in and asked our friendly resident person what was the best to have. He pointed us to a couple of items, one of which was a cartridge that goes in the battery we have, the other of which was a disposable and was like 6 grams. Now, of course, we're what's the best bang for your buck type people. Oh, this, you know, this 6 gram is great, blah, blah, blah. It's this much money. You know, this other one's only a 1 gram and it's like $10 cheaper. Okay. So what's so great about this 1 gram? Well, it's pure THCP.
Yes.
Tell people what THCP is.
So I went to go look this stuff up. So Delta 9 tetrahydrocannabinol or THCP is a cannabinoid related closely to THC and found in very low concentrations in the cannabis plant. Now, according to the researchers who discovered it, THCP interacts with the endocannabinoid system similarly to THC, but in a far greater affinity for the cannabinoid receptors. Now, the research has found that THCP binds to CB1 receptors up to 33 times,
more than traditional THC, which means THCP is potentially 33 times as potent as THC.
Oh, it sure the fuck is. Oh. Now, it's unique because of its longer alkaline side chain. The string of carbon atoms is much longer than traditional THC, 7 versus 5. And this makes it attach more securely to the receptors throughout the body. Thus, it takes a much smaller amount to impact different functions governed by the endocannabinoid system than for THC to have the same effect.
So I want to just point out something. We had a single edible yesterday. That was yesterday.
Just one, and it was only 10 milligrams.
Yeah, and I have not had a whole lot.
He's still hungover from this damn gummy, y'all, more than 24 hours later.
Yes, I'm still sitting here going, what the actual...
And this is some shit you can get legally, interestingly.
Yes.
Now, the THCP is, again, 33 times more capable of binding to CB1 receptors than THC, which means more psychoactivity is at risk with even smaller doses. One could consume too much and experience unwanted side effects like dry mouth, dizziness, or lethargy. Yeah, we experienced all of that. Now, it's also worth remembering that THCP is usually only present in small concentrations in cannabis. Hence, it's difficult to say what impact the cannabinoid plays in the overall effect of cannabis. It's theorized that THCP could be one reason why some cannabis varietals are so much more potent than others, despite having a similar or lower concentration of THC. However, there's no definite proof of this concept.
Yeah, so why do I sound like I have throat cancer? Well, because I've been sick for the last week, weirdo. It's as simple as that.
He got the end of convention crud.
Yes, and unfortunately I've...
And as you can hear, he shared it.
Yes. So now we were... we were working on the script, and in the script it's kind of... This is a script that was... It's a light script this week, so... And I'm sitting there, we're going back and forth, and I copy paste between the web browser and the script. And at that moment, Google Docs decided to go into an updating screen. The actual fuck. I'm legitimately using the app, and you pick that fucking moment to update my fucking app. You piece of shit. Anyway, okay, that's enough of that. So, now, one other thing we are doing too is honey, we're doing some logo stuff here. So
we are, but there's something we have to play in response to that Google update.
Bad podcaster, get the spray bottle.
No, that wasn't me that did it though.
I know that, but hey, you know, it's worth
breaking the balls.
Okay, so
yes, we are working on a new logo. We figured since we have finally settled on what our structure for our show looks like, we figured we should update our logo because it's rather metaphoric when you think about it. Because when we started our show, we were in a very dark place, arguably, and we've only recently come into the light and gotten to where our ballast is starting to stabilize. Would you not agree?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So it only seemed fair that this started with a simple graphic thing that Foamboy was doing. He played with our logo and turned it grayscale. And we liked it so much, we started noodling with it. And it's actually taking on a life of its own. So our new merch will actually have the most updated logo once we have it perfected. But I swear to God, Foamboy has beachballed on this for at least 2 days.
Yeah, something like that. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to... there's things I'm going to have to do to make sure this stuff can be uploaded, because of course I can't fucking just share this stuff, because that would make life easy if I could just share it, you know, like it's here. This is a file that's right here. I only want people to view it. I don't want to necessarily have a name. I just want anybody to be able to view it. Can I do that? No, I can't do that. No, all right.
What are you having a stroke about over there?
I'm trying to make it so that people can see these lovely logos I've created, and I can't do
it. Fair enough. Well, while you're coming completely unhinged, I'm sure that I can vamp for a few moments on the bullshit.
Yes, you can. But
not sure what I'm going to vamp on, but I'm sure, yes, to address the statement, you know, Foamboy does sound like he's got throat cancer because he has been undeniably ill. It started with, I think I have allergies. It became, okay, this is more than allergies. Then progressed to, okay, I think it's settling in my chest. I'm like, okay, NyQuil, Robitussin, let's knock the shit out of it. I even myself had a hot toddy before the show today because I'm like, no, I am not, I'm not getting sick. That's not in the cards. I have a lot of shit I'm trying to do. This is the time when we probably should mention the fact that there will not be a Lotus Effect next week because we will not be here. We are going to our lovely cottage.
Yes.
And we will be incommunicado for the entire time. However, I did realize, my darling,
what's that?
That unless I do something amazing, which probably won't happen, there's no way getting around it with the way that my instructor releases things. I'm going to actually have to have a small amount of tech involved in my life because I'm going to have to get my work for the week done while we are at the cottage, sadly.
Yeah, probably. I mean, we're going to have to deal with some stuff. So I'm attempting to...
Yes, I know. You're attempting to upload things.
Yes.
And yes, you know what? Hot Titties needs to be a T-I-D-D-I-E-S.
Yeah, Hot Titties.
Yeah, it needs to be a show title.
Yes.
Yes, I'm not looking forward to having to bring tech because we are very much anti-tech when it comes to the cottage. We like to have that be the place that we arguably unplug, or the amount of tech that we utilize is minimal.
Exactly. So I'm putting some of these up here. I have a feeling I'm just going to have to, I don't know, I'll figure something out here to share these. But
well, while you're doing that, I think we can safely go to our Duncan Hines segment where we have you fine folks call 253-237-3321 and tell us about your worst date.
Okay, well, you got to hit the clip to
start. Well, I'm going to hit the clip, of course, but I was letting them know what we were doing. Duh.
The world needs a wake-up call. We're going to phone it in.
That's right. Phoning it in to 253-237-3321. We want to hear about your worst date, and we're going to see what this caller had to say.
Yeah. Happy Cyber Day. Phoenix Homeboy. Salutations, greetings, jazz. My worst date. So technically, I've only ever dated one person, which is my now wife, so I can honestly say I've never had a worst date. So, I mean, I guess the worst out of all of them, but I really don't remember that being one. So, yeah. My answer is none, I guess. But, yeah. So, that's that. So, anyhow, I got to stand on two tectonic plates today. That was cool. So, there's it. So, all right, well, I'm going to get back to this exhibit thing that we're at because we're actually on the date day today. So, yeah, having fun. Well, love you guys. Stay dangerous. And whether or not the water fountain's working or it's not and you're pretty thirsty, go ahead and give a hearty ka-caw!
Ka-caw! Mr. Christopher Battles, thank you so much. That was a fantastic and I dare to say not surprising when you said that you had only dated one person and it was your now wife. I mean, we kind of could ascertain that, of course, it wasn't a bad date because you married the lovely, so it must have been a good date. And so we did actually get a show title out of the transcript on that, Apple Cider Day. We do like that. So we have opened the phone lines, 253-237-3321. Call in and tell us about your worst date. And Foamboy, we want to hear about your worst date. We're going to put you on the hot seat here.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so The worst. I'm actually gonna say the worst date was probably the quote unquote last date I went on with my ex. Yes, we were driving to the date and she started and she saw that something had flashed on my screen in my car and she was very jealous and started yelling at me. Yes. And I had to try and defend myself because I was, she thought I was cheating on her. So, yes, that was that sitting there knowing that I had to pretend to be friendly with her, even though I wanted nothing to do with her and I was scared out of my fucking mind. That was pretty much the worst date I think I've ever had.
Your ex is a fucking psycho.
Yeah, she is a psycho, but that's as much as, and honestly, I don't think that's about the only date I can remember because, you know, it was before the last date I had was probably in the Reagan administration or something like that. I don't know. But something like that. But you wanted to know what my worst date was. That's the most I can remember. Okay, so there you go. So what was your worst date?
Okay, so in all fairness, I've never actually been on a date. Despite being married twice, I've never actually been on a date. I've never actually had someone come pick me up, we go somewhere, and return me back home.
Okay.
Just saying. I mean, you, of course, could probably say that, you know, the day that I first met either one of my exes could qualify as the worst date because it led to an unhappy conclusion that cost me $1,000 the second time and however much in lost child support the first time, because I was like, you know what? You give me your rights. You don't have any rights to my kids, and I don't give a shit about the money you owe me for child support. Fuck off and die. I don't need your money. I will raise these kids on my own, and you will wish that you had been in their life because they're great kids. So there you go.
Yes. Now, I'm actually... Honey, I'm gonna paste this into the chat, and you can tell me if that link actually renders for you or not.
Sure, I'm glad to do so.
Because I'm trying to share these off of our drive here, but I cannot.
That is what it renders to.
You should be. It should.
I'm just telling you, this is what comes up when I did that.
Oh, because you're.
I'm just telling you.
Okay, why is it? Oh, well, that's not good. Yeah, that's not what I want. There's a reason I...
Yes, I understand. Okay, this is why I am testing it for you. But
okay.
Mind you, again, we want to hear about your worst date, 253-237-3321. Give us a call. We'd love to hear about it. And yeah, I agree with Squalor Bill. Yelling equals date over. 100%. Sadly, he was married to the heifer when she started screaming at him and stuff. And yeah, that's just not... That's not okay, especially over something like that where you weren't cheating on her. I mean, it's very cut and dry, you know.
Yeah.
There's no purpose for that. That's abuse.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, that's abuse. And I don't get with that.
Yeah, exactly. Wait a minute here.
Then again, you have one of those amazing relationships with me where we don't. Yes, sometimes I lose my temper because I am a very fiery phoenix, but at the end of the day,
that's one of them.
I'm not going to allow myself to, that's my favorite one, by the way. I'm not going to allow myself to sink to that level of being accusatory, hateful, hurtful, etc. That, you know, people, you deserve better than that, bottom line. And yes, your links are now working in the chat.
Yeah, because I'm copying them from...
So while you're doing that, we will keep the phone lines open, 253-237-3321. So tell us about your worst date. And in the meantime, we're going to get high.
I'll take a drink. And my name's Smoke Little Reef. You know, I like to smoke. Reefer, you know, I'd relax as many other things. A couple of doobies, you know, just to get you through the day and everything, but I do not freebase cocaine.
That's right. We do not freebase cocaine, but we do enjoy some of that Delta 8, 9, 10, 11 PA, God, however many there are. But here's the problem. There's a proposed Tennessee rule that is seeking to close the hemp THCA loophole. Now, in April 2023, Tennessee lawmakers passed legislation to regulate and tax hemp produced, grown, and manufactured and sold in the state. Now, under the bill, the Tennessee Department of Agriculture was tasked with developing rules to govern the industry, including regulation for product testing, compliance, and enforcement. In December, the department released a draft proposal of the new rules mandated by the legislation. The 2018 Farm Bill legalized hemp at the federal level, defining hemp as cannabis growers defining hemp as cannabis that contains no more than 0.3% Delta 9 THC, which we've reported to you. The person who came up with that number admits it's just bullshit. So using this definition, many hemp growers have begun producing cannabis that's high in THCA, a cannabinoid that is converted to Delta-9 THC when subjected to heat through a process known as decarboxylation.
Goddamn too high, goddamn too high, goddamn too high.
So federal regulations require hemp to be tested for THC content within 30 days of harvest, using a test that combines the amounts of Delta-9 THC and THCA using a specific formula to determine total THC. Cannabis with more than 0.3% total THC at testing time is considered marijuana under federal law and is still illegal. Some hemp growers, however, have developed agricultural processes and strains of cannabis that don't express high levels of THCA until late in the 30-day testing window. By testing early in the window, growers can produce hemp flower that complies with regulations at testing time but has high levels of THCA after harvesting and packaging. As a result, THCA hemp flower is available in many states that don't have legal cannabis, despite the fact it's psychoactive when smoked or vaped.
Oh, bitch.
The companies marketing these products argue that they comply with the Farm Bill and thus are legal. Others, however, see the interpretation as a loophole that's likely to be closed. Already, several states have taken steps to regulate hemp cannabinoids. The new rules proposed by the Tennessee Department of Agriculture would redefine hemp by requiring finished products to have no more than 0.3% THC total. Hemp advocates say the rule would make many THCA, Delta-8 THC, and CBD products that are available now illegal, with devastating effects on the state's hemp growers and retailers. The Department of Agriculture's proposed rules would also allow it to conduct random inspections and test products being sold by retailers. Hemp advocates argue that by the time the products have been manufactured and received by retailers, some THCA may have been decarboxylated, making them contain more than 0.3 Delta 9. Hess says that the rule would wipe out the industry for THCA and CBD flower in Tennessee. And that's true. I agree completely. This is bullshit, and we need not do it. This needs to be killed. Legalize it or leave what we have alone. Stop sticking your old antiquated dick into these laws. It's not going to end well. Much like it usually doesn't end well in this next segment, we're going to go to the back of the napkin. Now, the NTSB is investigating a fatal crash possibly involving partially automated driving system. And this time, Tesla Autopilot was not involved. The National Transportation Safety Board is investigating a fatal crash in San Antonio, Texas, involving a Ford electric vehicle that may have been using a partially automated driving system. The agency said in a statement Friday that a team of investigators from its Office of Highway Safety will travel to Texas and work with police on the February 24th crash on Interstate 10. Now, the preliminary information shows that a Ford Mustang Mach-E SUV equipped with the company's partially automated driving system collided with the rear of a Honda CR-V that was stopped in one of the highway lanes. Television station KSAT reported that the Mach-E driver told police the Honda was stopped in the middle lane with no lights on before the crash around 9:50 p.m. The 56-year-old driver of the CR-V was killed.
This guy is fucking stupid!
The NTSB is investigating the fatal crash due to its continued interest in advanced driver assistance systems and how vehicle operators interact with these technologies, according to a statement. Ford's Blue Cruise system allows drivers to take their hands off the steering wheel while it handles steering, braking, and acceleration on highways. The company says the system isn't fully autonomous and it monitors drivers to make sure they pay attention to the road. It operates on a 97% of controlled access highway in the U.S. and Canada, according to Ford. Now, there are no fully autonomous vehicles that are for sale to the public in the United States. I'm going to tell y'all, my car does this, okay? When I'm on cruise control and I have the little button pushed, my car will stay in the lane. My car will steer itself. If it detects that I'm getting too close to the car in front of me, it will brake for me and accelerate once the distance between myself and the car in front of me has increased. It does all of that. But it also tells you after a while, it will flash on your dash, you know, to put your hands back on the steering wheel. There's absolutely no excuse why this crash happened. Okay, look, I've been on 10. The speed limit down there is like 80, 85, 90 miles an hour. It's fucking insane. I'm surprised the guy that hit this CRV actually was not more seriously injured or killed, if I'm honest. But the excuse that, oh, you know, this is... What?
I watched you reach up to touch your screen like you were trying to fucking scroll.
No, actually, I was wiping a piece of moisture off the screen is what I was doing. I was not trying to touch my non-touchable screen.
Fuck you!
Anyway. Yeah, so...
Yeah, yeah.
Like coincidence? I think not!
I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
The point of the matter is that... My car does this, and it still requires you to put your... It's for something like if I need to take my sweatshirt off, or I need to do something that momentarily requires me to take my hands off of the wheel. But it's not meant for taking a fucking nap, folks. Like, come on. Like I said, I know that stretch of 10. I've been across it in a tractor trailer numerous times. If you're paying the fuck attention, okay... And especially if this happened, I don't know, this happened at like 9 o'clock at night. The traffic should not have been that damn heavy that if you were paying attention, you could not have seen that there was a car in your lane in time enough to swerve. This bugs the shit out of me because this particular feature, all these vehicles are making it where you can take your hands off the wheel and you can do this and you can do that. Sorry, but with great power comes great responsibility. Say it's Spider-Man.
Yes. Now, meanwhile, we're here at the junk drawer time.
Humanity was incapable of solving even its most basic problems, like garbage, which had been stacked for centuries.
Now, the appeals court says bans on religious ads are unconstitutional because it's pretty much impossible to define what religion is.
Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man. Living in the sky, who watches everything you do, every minute of every day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he does not want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you.
Get off my tits!
I agree.
Yeah. So,
Things have become heated and tangled when it comes to free speech, religion, and the government's attempt to control either of these things. Now, government entities tend to feel the best way to avoid the appearance of favoring any religion is to stay out of it completely. Now, a wise move by the government, but not the best move when it comes to free speech. Now, the Hillsborough Area Regional Transit Authority, or HART, has a policy that prohibits the placing of ads on its vehicles and property that primarily promote a religious faith or religious organization. Now, the policy sounds pretty normal until you take a closer look at it. Now, that's what the 11th Circuit Appeals Court has done, affirming the lower court's ruling that this policy violated the plaintiff's, which is the Young Israel of Tampa, First Amendment rights. Now, the advertisement Young Israel sought to place on HART properly informed riders of the organization's annual Hanukkah on Ice events. Shabbat Shalom. HART rejected the proposal outright. Young Israel appealed the decision was removed, calling it a religious-based icon. Young Israel refused, stating the menorah...
No. They appealed the decision because HART's general counsel stated the ad might be okay if they removed the menorah, calling it a religious-based icon.
Wow, did I skip that? Wow.
You did. Oh, now, wow. Of course, Young Israel refused because it's an essential part of the ad and the Jewish faith. Now, of course, HART responded by citing its policy again. So Young Israel sued.
Yes, they sued, and the lower court granted Young Israel a permanent injunction against enforcement of this policy, stating that it was unconstitutional. The 11th Circuit affirms this decision for the most part. Now, so in its appeal, HART asked us to overturn the district court's summary judgment order and hold that its policy prohibiting advertisements that primarily promote a religious faith or religious organization is a permissible context, i.e. subject matter, regulation of a non-public forum, and does not constitute improper viewpoint discrimination. Now, we declined to answer this question on first impression, which has generated a small circuit split, because we affirm the district court's alternative ruling that HART's policy, even if viewpoint neutral, is unreasonable due to a lack of objective and workable standards. Now, it's this last sentence that makes this decision extremely interesting, especially since there are likely dozens, if not hundreds, of government entities in the 11th Circuit that have similarly worded policies. Now, the biggest problem with this policy is it doesn't clearly define religion, which means advertisers can't possibly know what is or isn't permitted. Making things worse, HART itself doesn't even know what is or isn't permitted under its policy.
Spooky language. Spooky language.
So that's a problem, according to the 11th Circuit. And it's a problem that doesn't have a solution other than forbidding government entities from refusing to run ads government employees view as religion-based. The application of this policy by HART has been anything but sound and reasonable. The concurrence digs even deeper into this. Judge Newsom says the problem isn't just the ban on religious advertisements. The problem is the term religion is impossible to define with enough clarity to allow the government to regulate it without violating the Constitution. Given this, it would seem impossible to enforce policies restricting religious-based ads in any public area. If the term can't be clearly defined, it subjects protected expression to subjective interpretations by government employees, which means any decision reached can't be considered reasonable under the Constitution. And so far, only HART is directly affected by this decision. But given what's been handed down here, I'd expect more constitutional changes of state or challenges of state and local policies in the near future.
Yeah. Okay. And it's, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the religion, politics, something, I don't know.
Here's the thing. I don't think that by running an ad supporting an event, it's business, not personal. I find a very gray area there with companies. I mean, I understand as a private company, you have the right to refuse service for any reason. I get that. But is it a violation of freedom of speech. That's what I think it really comes down to.
I don't know, but I do know that, you know, something is the case.
I know that we're on to our dishonorable mentions.
Y'all are a bunch of fucking degenerates.
Yeah.
And this Samsung users want to know, why does my S Pen smell so bad?
Ooh, that smell. Can't you smell that smell?
Yeah, now, electric design is a field full of varying opinions and trade-offs. Now, companies agonize over the physical shapes of their devices and the materials used, all trying to create a high-quality, premium-feeling device that fits within the constraints of mass production. Now, material choices usually center around cost, feeling, and durability, but how often do manufacturers take into account smell? Samsung users are finding that if you pop out the Galaxy S24 Ultra's S Pen stylus and give it a whiff like you're huffing a marker, you'll find that it smells bad. Now, 9to5 Google found the following incredible post from Reddit user Latifil titled, "Why does my S Pen smell so bad?" The post has almost 250 comments of users, all mostly agreeing with the post sentiment that the S Pen in my Galaxy S24 absolutely reeks. Either I have sensitive nose or this thing is being barbecued by the internals while it's unsheathed. The top-rated, very online comment is, "Op got me," and the original poster, "got me to smell my pen. Can confirm it's a stinky boy." Those describing the smell all seem to agree Samsung's stylus often smells like an electrical fire. Now, one user writes that it's a very burnt and plastic smell. Another says the S23 Ultra smells like new tech with a hint of burning. A more descriptive commenter says it smells like an electric mixer that's turned on, but the beaters are jammed up and can't turn, so the motor's overheating. The S Pen is mostly plastic, but has a soft rubber tip, and a lot of users identify that soft bit as the smelly part. Now, you know,
I know exactly what that smells like for other reasons, but I'm concerned that you people are smelling your tech. I just want to put it out there.
Yeah, well, you know, what I'm concerned about is that, and so I actually did have to go back into the folder. We actually do have a cavalcade of stupidity this week.
Look at that.
Yeah, so for our last call this week, I have a place in the script for this kind of stuff. And so we're going to play the cavalcade of stupidity that was actually submitted for your approval this week by the Rev himself.
Woohoo!
Heidi ho, pedalheads, and welcome to Sir Reverend Cybertrucker's Cavalcade of Stupidity! Now, I know some of you won't know exactly what I mean when I say left-lane camper, but I know that Phoenix knows exactly what I mean. Now, a left-lane camper is a person who refuses to do the speed limit or above while remaining in the left-hand lane without ever going back to the right-hand side. For those of us who actually know how to drive, we understand that there are three questions you need to ask yourself at all times. Number one, am I in the way? Number two, am I in the way? And number three, am I in the fucking way? Alabama Big Earl knows exactly what a left lane camper is and decided to write a song about it. From the 2011 album PhD in Skanky, this is Alabama Big Earl with "Get Out of the Left Lane, You Stupid Sumbitch."
Get out of the left lane, you stupid sumbitch. You ain't considered faster. Hey, you no driving freak. If I had a gun, I'd shoot you, then I'd piss on your grave. Get over in the right lane, get the fuck out of the way. You're talking on your cell phone while you should be on the gas. You got 40 cars behind you, just crawling up your ass. You don't give a shit, called you think you on the road. So I'm giving you the bird, bitch, and telling you where to go. So get out of the left lane, you stupid sumbitch. You inconsiderate bastard, hey, you no driving trick. If I had a gun, I'd shoot you, then I'd piss on your grave. Get over in the right lane, get the fuck out of the way.
Okay, we will play the full version of this in the Studio 33.
I just want to say thank you, Rev Cybertrucker, for that. Wow, love that, love that. So true. Oh my God, yes.
Yes. Now, meanwhile, I think there's a clip that I need to play here, and sums it up.
So fucking over this. I've fucking enjoyed every minute of it.
Yeah, and we did.
We did enjoy every minute of it.
And now,
if you enjoyed every minute of it, stick around because we're going to continue the shenanigans in Studio 33.
That's right. And meanwhile, the show ends as something like this.
Jordan fades back, swoosh, and that's the game.
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. You're cool, and fuck you. I'm out.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Fucking embarrassing!
Fucking A, let's quit the swearing.